And we have Kevin and Angela Gebhardt, and they are with SEND, and we found out about you from John and Jane Schlack. And where did you meet them? At okay. And Jane said, you got to have these people. So you're here. So you come highly recommended. And so we are glad that you're here. Kevin and Angela, come up and introduce your family and tell us a little bit about yourself. And make sure you tell us why you don't have your display. We're greatly disappointed. A missionary that comes without a display is, what can we say? Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Pastor Mike. So I guess I might as well start with that story, right? We had a birthday party yesterday of one of our best friends in small group, and so we also had a short-term team from our trip that's going to be visiting us and to do a help with our conference next year for SEND International in China. And so we went to the training, dropped our kids off, and then we went to go get them at the party, and like you said, the snow happened, right? And so we got stuck there. So unfortunately, our usual display is stuck at home, and it was at home. We got stuck and weren't able to be home, I guess. So that's where that is. So unfortunately, we also had our prayer letters and all that, prayer cards there. So, but what I did do is I do have a sign up in the back. If any of you afterwards feel like the Lord is leading you to pray or to be involved in our ministry in any way, and you say, well, I'd like to have a prayer card, if you could just sign up in the back. And I have, usually people just put their name and email address, but I have a third column kind of for the other there, so if you want to put your mailing address, I'd be happy to send you a prayer card, and you have your very own rookie card for Kevin Angela that way sent to you in the mail. So thank you again for coming. I do appreciate it. Thank you to Pastor Mike. It's a pleasure to be able to share what God has put on our hearts, and I hope the expectations aren't too high after that intro, but we just want to be able to share again what God has done in our lives, and it's always a privilege and encouragement to us to be able to do that. So thank you. So yeah, let me go ahead and start us off in prayer, and we'll get started. May the peoples praise you, O God. May all the peoples praise you. Let the nations sing for joy. God, our God, will bless us. God will bless us. May all the ends of the earth fear him. Lord, that's our desire, is that you would be glorified tonight as we talk about the things that you've done in our lives, that you'd be glorified tonight as we talk about what you are doing and have done and what we believe you'll continue to do in China. And Lord, that's our heart's desire, is that you would be glorified, and that the nations that do not believe in you now would be worshipers of King Jesus. And Lord, I pray that tonight we would be not only seeing some fun pictures or learning some things about another part of the world, but that we would see you at work. And Lord, to be honest, I know sometimes it can be discouraging to see that the church in America feels like it's not strengthening, feels like it's maybe shrinking. And so, Lord, open our eyes to see what the great things that you're doing around the world, and that you are a much bigger God than we even realize. So, Lord, I pray that we would be encouraged, challenged, that we'd be inspired, and that we would be seeing a glimpse of your greatness tonight. So we give you all the thanks and all the praise, and hear me pray. Amen. You go ahead and introduce our family.
Okay. Well, I will introduce our family. Actually, all of them are in the back row, including my brother and sister-in-law as well. We have five children. I won't try to point out who's who, but we had three girls, Maya, Haley, and Shelby. They are 13, almost 12, and 10. And then the Lord gave us twins, and Jackson and Liliana are almost 4. So since many of you don't know us, I'm just going to share with you briefly our testimony of how God called us to himself, and then we'll share how God called us to the nations, and then to China specifically. So first of all, how the Lord called us to himself. Kevin grew up in a Christian home. His dad is a pastor, and his earliest memories are hearing of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And when he was a young boy, he had done something wrong, disobeyed his parents, and his mom got down on her knees and talked to him again about the gospel and how Jesus could forgive all of his sins and cleanse him. And make him new. And at that point in time, he trusted in Christ, repented, and ever since then, he has an amazing testimony of God's preserving grace in his life, of causing him to just love God more and more as he's grown, and to have an increasing desire to serve him. He's a man who loves God's word. And so that's basically Kevin's testimony of God's saving grace in his life. Mine is one of growing up in a home with a devout Italian Catholic mother, a father who did not practice any belief with us. But my mom faithfully took us to Mass every Sunday. And I've come as later on in my Christian walk to look back and give thanks that God did use that experience growing up to lay a foundation of his existence. I never had a doubt whether God existed. I knew that I had guilt because of my sin, but nothing to remove that guilt, no matter how much I attempted in my own effort to get rid of that. And so I went into college with a lot of questions, big life questions, and very much aware of that guilt of my sin. And so I answered an ad in the school university newspaper for a mother's helper. And God connected me with a strong Christian family, specifically the mom who I worked side by side with in her home. And she shared the gospel with me faithfully, would open God's word and answer deep life questions from the Bible. She had a neighbor who came home one summer, and she was attending Michigan State InterVarsity. Are you all familiar with InterVarsity? It's like Campus Crusade. And so the lady that I was working for, she asked this college girl neighbor of hers, would you take Angela to InterVarsity at her campus? And she was excited, and she said, yes, I'll go with her to her campus. So she took me to InterVarsity, and the very first night, the gospel was clearly presented, and God opened my eyes to see who he was and who I was, and that I was in need of a Savior. And so that night, I repented and trusted in Christ. And a few months later, I met Kevin, also was involved in InterVarsity, and he led a Bible study on living holy lives, fully devoted to Christ, and as young people, not making compromises in our walk with Christ and fully obeying God's commands and his word. And I said to the girl next to me, one day I'm going to marry a guy like that. And he was exactly like that. And so I didn't know that it was going to be him, but I knew that I wanted God to bring me a man who loved God's word, who had a passion to obey him and to follow him and to live his life glorifying God. So here we are, 15 years later and 5 children, and on our way to China.
So despite that intro, I still got the better end of the deal, I think, on the marriage on that one. So I want to talk to you tonight now about, again, that's how the Lord brought us to himself. How did he bring us into missions? And a big part of it, as you see here on the slide, Send International, again, is a group that we're going with, that John and Jane went with. And this is their theme, or their mission statement, I guess, is church planting among the unreached. And so in a short answer, I think that desire to work among the unreached peoples was the main driving factor that felt that made us feel like we can't just be here. We need to go somewhere else to do ministry. So I wanted to talk tonight a little bit about unreached people groups and what that is exactly. So hopefully this will be an educational time, and also where they are and how our ministry fits into that. So I think the group is small enough tonight that we can be interactive, right, if that's not too different from what you're used to here. So the concept unreached peoples is in the Bible, but that term is not, right? So this is a term that missionaries use, but because it's not specifically in the Bible, we may not be as familiar with it. So it's similar to unsaved, right? Unreached is, but a little bit different. So what's different between those two terms, unreached versus unsaved? Can anyone tell me what is a little bit different about those terms? Okay, perfect, right? So unsaved would be people who don't believe in the gospel, right? Whereas unreached are those who have not even had a chance to hear yet. And so as I mentioned, that phrase itself is not in the Bible, but the concept is, and I think one of the places we see it loudest is in Romans 15. So Let me go ahead and read that to you. From Jerusalem all the way around to Illyricum, this is Paul speaking, and that's modern-day Albania, I fulfill the ministry of the gospel of Christ, and thus I make it my ambition to preach the gospel, not where Christ has already been named, lest I build on someone else's foundation. But as it is written, those who have never been told about him will see, and those who have never heard will understand. Therefore, now, since I no longer have any more room for work in these regions, I am going to Spain. Okay, as I mentioned, the word unreached isn't there, but how do you see the concept of Paul wanting to go to not just the unsaved, but to the unreached in this passage here? Okay, good. So Paul's wanting to go somewhere where other people have not gone before, too, right? Any other... this is a ding for the right answer, I guess. No. Any others? There's a couple places I think we see, so... Anywhere else in that passage you see that? And those who have never heard. Very good, right? And what's really interesting is when Paul is doing his planning of where he wants to go next, he's actually writing the letter of Romans, right? And he, even though he hasn't been to Rome... he's not planning on staying there. He's actually planning on having them send him on his way to Spain. Actually, Romans, believe it or not, was a missionary letter, support letter in some ways. He was planning to have them help him and send him on his way. And so he's explaining a little bit why he's going to go to Rome but not stay there, why he's wanting to go on to Spain. And that is this really surprising statement that he says, right? He says, I've fulfilled the ministry of the gospel from Jerusalem all the way to Albania. Like, wow, that's a long ways, right? I mean, even today with cars and planes, it would be very difficult to make a statement like this. And furthermore, surprising is to say that he has no room to work in these regions. You might wonder, Paul, wait a minute. I mean, not everyone is believing in these towns, right? You yourself got beat up and kicked out of some of these towns, so you know that not everyone is believing. So how can you say there's no room for you to work? And the reason why Paul would say that is, as both of you mentioned, is Paul's desire was to not only go to the unsaved, right, who don't yet believe, but his heart's desire was to go to the unreached, right, those who had not even had a chance to hear yet and will not have a chance unless someone like Paul or like a missionary goes to preach to them. So that's where we get this idea that, yes, it's important to speak to our unsaved neighbors here, right? Amen. But then there's also some people who are called to go to places where there is no opportunity and where people have not only are not believing but have not even heard of the gospel. Okay, so that's unreached. Now, how about people groups? There's another term that's not in the Bible, and specifically, so what does that mean? And this time, let's do an analogy from U.S. history. So think back, 1776, right, the founding of our country. And people debate, is the United States, was it ever a Christian country or not? But how about, that debate aside, how about just, would you say it was a reached country or not when you think about the beginning of our country? So, again, not talking about unsaved, but would you say it's, was it a reached country? We talk about reached versus unreached. What do you think? Yes. Okay, good. I would agree with you. Why would you say that? Okay, sure. Either one of you. There you go. You don't want to disagree with it, right? Wait, what's that? Yeah, absolutely, right? Even your dollar bills, right, saying God we trust in. So for someone who was not a Christian, right, again, not everyone was born again, certainly, but they probably had someone in their family, right, who's a Christian, people in their town. There were probably was a church, right, in their city. They had the Bible in their own language, and so they had access to the gospel, right? So again, even if someone was not saved, I think we would agree that for the settlers who were here, right, that it was a reached country. But who else was here other than the settlers? The American Indians, right? Very good. And so I think in our country, the best analogy to think of what this idea of people groups are is to think of the American Indians, especially a couple hundred years ago before they were as integrated as today. So this is a picture here of David Brainerd ministering to the Delaware Indians. And so, again, I think this is a great concept of what Jesus is talking about when he says in the Great Commission, go and make disciples of all nations. And that word nations that he uses is ethne. So you even can hear in that word that he's thinking these ethnic type nations. And so, again, when we think of nations, we think of United States, Canada, Israel, Mexico, maybe, right? Whereas when Jesus is thinking nations, he's thinking like in Deuteronomy 7, when God said to Moses, okay, I want you to go in and you're going to take over the Canaanites and the Hittites and the parasites, right? And so you can even hear in those nations, these ites, right? This idea of people. And so when he's thinking nations, he's not thinking United States, Canada, but the Delaware Nation or the Chippewa Nation or the Seminole Nation, right? So nations in this kind of people group sense. And so you can see, wow, for the Delaware Indians, right, even though they were in a Christian country, they were an unreached nation, right? Because if you were not a Christian as a Delaware Indian, you didn't have anyone that you knew that was a Christian, right? You didn't have a church in your town. You didn't have the Bible in your own language, and you had no opportunity to hear the gospel unless a missionary like David Brainerd would come, would learn your language, and be able to speak to you, okay? So that's kind of interesting, right? Now, why is that relevant for today? Well, one of the reasons why we want to talk about unreached people groups today is we have countries like China that is not by any means a Christian country, but is reached in the sense of probably about 6 or 7% of the Han Chinese, which is the main people group in China, are Christian. Let me back up one. So any of the Chinese that you would see in the Lansing or Southeast Michigan area here would be Han Chinese. So if you think about Caucasian being the main ethnic group here in the United States, the Han would be the dominant and the main ethnic group there in China. But just like we had here, like the Native American Indians, so in China you have Native Chinese people groups, you could say, who are completely different from the Han people and don't interact very similarly to how the American Indians wouldn't have interacted much with the white man. And so, again, even though there's a country that is reached in the sense of has the gospel, there are many nations within that country, just like with the American Indians you had here, nations within the country that, again, not only are not Christian, but don't have access to the gospel and would be considered unreached. Well, you might, I'll tell you a little bit more about where some of the unreached people groups are, but let me tell you now a little bit about our story and how we got interested in unreached people groups. So this picture here, actually, you know what, let me do this first. Let me go ahead and show you a picture of where, I'll get to our story in a minute, but let me show you a picture of where some of these unreached people groups are, right? You think, wow, that one country, right, of the United States had a lot of nations within it, didn't it? So how many nations are there around the world? And we would estimate about 16 or 17,000 different tribal groups around the world, and about 6,500 of them are still considered unreached. I'm not sure if any of you have ever heard the term 1040 window before or not. That's the one that missionaries like to use. But that's it right there. Oops, wrong button. So this area here, 1040 window basically is the top half of Africa and the bottom half of Asia. And that's where over 95% of the unreached people groups in the world are. So that's what those red dots represent, is all the unreached people groups. India is that really red country, right? One-third of the unreached people groups in the world are in that one country alone. They speak like 2,000 languages there, from what I've heard. Amazing. Another slide I think is helpful to understand the need for missionaries to focus on this part of the world is this one here. So now these blue dots represent full-time Christian workers, whether that's missionaries who are overseas or whether that's inter-varsity workers or full-time Christian workers here in the United States. And what you'll notice, right, when you combine the two graphs together is, wow, there's a real shortage, right, in that unreached part of the world. So not to say that, you know, those missionaries, those blue dots are in the wrong spot now, right, or they're not obeying God, but that going forward, wow, we really need to be sure that we're focusing on that unreached part of the world. Okay, so now let me back up a little bit of our story. How did we get interested specifically with unreached people? So the Lord was starting to burden our hearts to want to do ministry. I think what started with us even before a desire for missions was just a desire for God to be glorified in all of life, and we were getting really good teaching, hearing biographies about people who serve the Lord. And so the first place where we kind of tried to do more formal, not quite, maybe part-time ministry, I guess you could say, was at Oakland University, again, where we met. But rather than just sharing with the other American students, is we wanted to focus on the international students, where not many people were serving with. We loved that time. We still love being with people from other cultures. We still have a lot of good international student friends. And during that time, we had a student from Switzerland stay with us. And she was a Christian. Her name was Sarah. She's actually a missionary today in Pakistan. And she had just gotten back from a short-term missions trip in that summer and told us an unforgettable story. She was showing us pictures like this one from her trip to the area around the Himalayas. And as this title says here, these are Buddhist prayer flags. And each one of these flags there represents a different person or a family and the prayers that they're offering to their Buddhist gods. And it's a little bit hard to see, but these flags literally will go all the way up to the very tops of those mountains, hundreds of feet in the air, just thousands and thousands of these prayer flags lined up like that. And boy, it was just very hard to hear about the spiritual darkness that the people were in there praying to these gods who are no gods. So we next asked her, Angela said, well, Sarah, are there any, what's the church like there, right, in that part of the world? It's always interesting to hear what churches are like in other cultures. And Sarah just said, well, there is no church there because there's no Christians. And as the weight of that was sinking in, we next asked, well, are there any missionaries that are there right now, right, trying to reach them? And as she shook her head, no, I think the Lord really used that to spark a desire in our hearts to say that, you know what, missions to the unreached, you know, we've been looking for where we want to serve the Lord, and now this has to be a part of it somehow, right? We weren't ready to sign the dotted line yet, but we felt like we can't be the same now. We need to be sure that we're pursuing, again, not only those who are not saved here, but those who are unreached and have no opportunity to hear overseas. So the Lord continued to desire and fan into flame the passion to want to go to the unreached. Okay, let me skip forward again. And now let me zoom in on China, right? So you have all those red dots there, and why did we pick China specifically? With us being with international students, I think it was hard for us to pick a place. I think a lot of missionaries, they have been to a certain country, or they've always had a heart for certain people. But in our case, with international students, we love Chinese students, but we love students from other parts of the world too. So it was hard to decide that way. But one thing that we felt like we knew, rather than where we wanted to go, was who we wanted to go with. And that question was an easier one for us. Send International, you guys had, a good experience with them. Our church has had 3 or 4 different missionaries go out with that group. Send is based here in Detroit area too, so we've gone to some of their trainings, and we felt really good about them. So we said, well, let's see where Send is working with unreached peoples that would be a good fit for us. And so China quickly became a good place for that. So now this map here zooms in on China, and there's two dots here, two colored dots that I mainly want to point out. You see all these green dots here, especially in the eastern part of the country. Those represent people groups that are reached, that are at least 1 or 2% Christian. And then all the red dots here, especially in the southwest part of the country, represent the unreached people groups of China. They would estimate that there's about 500 different tribal groups within China, and that 400 of them would still be considered unreached. The area that Send is in, that we're looking at going to, is in Yunnan province. There's 20-some provinces in China, I think 27, but half of the unreached people groups in China are in this one province alone of Yunnan province, right there in the very southwest corner. It's just a very diverse area. And so we were really excited to see that Send was working in this part of China, and so we were thrilled to be able to have an opportunity to go there. Let me go ahead and tell you a little bit about our strategy that we're going to try to use in reaching these people. Up above here, you see 3 of the pictures of some of those unreached people groups in China, the Miao people, the Yi, and the Nashi. One of the challenges, there's always challenges with trying to reach a group anywhere, but one of the challenges that's unique to China is that it is a communist country, right? And so you're not allowed to go on a missionary visa. You also are not allowed to get a visa to live in the rural areas where most of these groups are. Again, similar to how American Indians are in rural areas here in China, many of these unreached people groups are in the countryside. And the government, if you want to go as a missionary, again, most missionaries will go in on a business visa or as a teacher. And if you go to Shanghai or Beijing, they don't think too much about it. But if you want to apply and say, I'd like to go and live in one of those villages, maybe you can see like the Yi picture in the middle, there the Chinese government is going to say, wait a minute, why would you as an American, right, want to live out in the middle of nowhere, right, unless you're a missionary or a spy or you're up to no good. And so what Send does what our strategy would be to go to a city in the area that's, you know, close to where some of these groups are, that where many of them have come as migrant workers. Or especially the city that we're looking at going to has a university that focuses especially on these ethnic minority students. And so when we went on our vision trip in April, there was about 8 or 9,000 students there, and I'd say probably over 90% of them were from these unreached tribal groups. And so the model of ministry basically is that as these students come, right, to the university, to then through English teaching, through hospitality and through other means of befriending them to be able to share the gospel with them, and then to equip them, Lord willing, as they become believers, to then go and reach their own peoples again, because they obviously can live. And actually, one of the main programs at the school is a teaching certificate program. And the certificate that they get to teach at their schoolhouses is only good back in their own village. So it's a good opportunity to be able to spread the gospel that way. So when we saw this, we said, hey, this sounds a lot like international student ministry, right, that we've loved doing for the last decade, right, where they come for a few years, right, you minister to them, and then they go back. And so we were very encouraged by how the needs and the opportunities that were there was just a perfect fit and blend for our experience and for our desires that the Lord had put on our hearts. So, okay, I wanted to go ahead and show you a video next that gives an example of how this worked at Sin. So go ahead and go to the melody video.
From Yi nationality group, so Yi is very large, about 7 million. We have three kind of Yi in my nationality. Black Yi is a king, and white Yi is just normal people, and they can live in freedom. But slave Yi, they are needed to work for the black Yi. My mom is from the slave Yi. My father's a black Yi. Black Yi only can married with black people and have never married with slave Yi. So my mother and my father, they would get married, but it was very hard for them. My village is a very small village. Because we live in the mountain, we have no road, we have no electricity, we have no school. I needed to walk 2 hours to go to school to study. Our teacher just graduated from the middle school. So it was very good to teach us very well. Where we stay at the mountain so we can see the beautiful cars. And I was thinking someday if I can sit in this kind of nice car is enough. I don't want to stay at home to live my parents' life. I wanted to come out to earn the money and give my parents and make them live a comfortable life. I met a lady who come from Beijing. I told to her about my dreams, and so she said if I wanted to study English in Yangshu, there has a lot of English school is there, and there, so I can work for her, and I can study there. Before, I just wanted to learn the English from there. My life has been changed. I become a Christian. My home village, it is far away from the place where I study. I can't call them and they can't call me. And we didn't see each other for years and never talked to each other. My family and my neighbors has a little bit trouble with each other, and then so my neighbor said they wanted to come to my family to kill all of my families. So if my family died and I can't see them anymore and I become an orphanage. So after that and. I they decided that their life is more important for their materials. And then I decided to come home to share the good news. After I experienced all kind of things, and I think everybody need a father. I really don't like live in my village. It's part of the father created. And and it doesn't matter you live in a village and in a city, but the most important thing is your heart and so how much we love the father.
That video for not only the testimony that it gives, but also I think a great picture of what our ministry would look like of these people who are different from the Han Chinese who have some Christianity, and how they'll be coming down and equipping them to then return to their own people. All right, if you could just switch over to the other PowerPoint, I'd like to show just a few pictures. Angela, would you like to come up? And as I mentioned, we went on a vision trip there in April and had a chance to see the city that we're in. So we found it's very helpful sometimes to give you some of the sights and sounds of the place where we'll be at.
So we had a wonderful time spending 2 weeks with our team and getting to meet the people that we'll be serving with. And for me, it was very exciting to see what would my daily life look like there in the city that we're going to be in. And it's one thing to try to picture it from explanations over Skype or maybe some pictures we found online, but it was definitely a whole different story to be there walking the streets. And one of the main things that I will be doing there is shopping in this market that you see here. That's the outdoor market. It's kind of about a 2x2 block outside year-round where you do that. So you can buy everything there. You can buy hardware, you can buy rugs, you can buy socks, you can buy meat and vegetables, everything. So it's a really neat place. This is actually, I don't know if we can do it. This is a video. Do you think you can? This is a video of the meat market. Gives you a little of the idea of how different it is there than maybe our local grocery store. It was a little overwhelming for the first time, and I said to the experienced missionary that was there with me, I said, "Wow, this is a lot of meat. What do they do if they don't sell it all?" And she said, "They bring it back tomorrow." And I said, "And what if they don't sell it tomorrow?" And she said, "Then they bring it back the next day." So anyway, it'll be our systems, I'm sure, will get used to all of that. And so that's kind of how we'll be getting our meat and our fruits and vegetables. You can go to the next slide. And this is a main staple there. Anybody have a guess at what that is? Jell-O is usually the number one American answer, along with anybody. What? Rice? No. Tofu. Good. Somebody usually says cheese, a block of cheese. We won't have any cheese there. So, and if we want butter, it's like $9 a pound. So we won't be having butter very often either. So yes, tofu, and I'll have to learn how to flavor it. This is duck, kind of like our rotisserie chicken here. We get to have a rotisserie duck. And then everybody can, I think, tell what that is. So in China, it takes a really long time to build relationships, especially as a foreigner. They're a little bit hesitant and not always trusting of you, so it takes some time. But they say that when you get invited into the home of a Chinese person, you know that you are now considered a trusted friend for life. And they would even be willing to, if they consider you a friend, they would be willing to give their life for you. So when that happens, that they invite you to their home to let you know that you now are a lifelong friend, they will serve us a pig's head. This is what you serve to an honored guest. Thankfully, Kevin is the most honored guest, and he will be served the eyeballs. So, this is, do you want to, we can just, you want to do that one? Okay, that's a video. If you can just click on that. See if you can try to guess what that is. Yes, it's eel. Very good. And then those are frogs, obviously, if you can see that. And then this is actually how they serve bread. There, it's in little, well, they're pretty big, big buns. And they don't cook things in an oven there. There's really not many ovens at all. And so they steam everything. So to cook their bread, they put it in these steamers. And those are sold everywhere in the city. There is also one indoor market that is, they said, is really just a place that people who have more money in the city like to shop. It kind of makes them feel like they're a little bit higher society. But as you can tell, I said, oh, is this market a little bit cleaner? And the missionary that I was with, she said, well, maybe a little bit. But as you can see, there's ice there, but everybody sifts through all the meat with their hands because Chinese people want to find the most tender meat. And it's totally fine if everybody handles it and they decide, nope, that's not a tender piece, and they put it back. So we'll be shopping in the outdoor market for the cheaper prices. Fresh fruit is everywhere in the city. We said, I think we only recognized probably 50% of the fruits and vegetables that we saw there. So we get to learn how to cook all kinds of new things. Pineapple, that's pineapple. And that is very cheap there. And they just shave off the outside. And they have this special tool that takes out, I don't know what you call it, all those little sharp pieces on the pineapple. And they put it on a stick, and everyone walks around with a pineapple lollipop. Yeah, next one. Nope. This one is a video, and it just shows you like a panoramic view of the city. It kind of gives you an idea of how big the city is. It's surrounded by mountains, as you'll see, and it is about 350,000 people. So for us, that might sound big, but for China, that's actually a pretty small city, or a moderate size. There's what you might notice in that picture is that there's no high-rise buildings. Probably most of the pictures that you're used to seeing about China are really big cities with high-rise buildings. And our city is mostly all residential or just small business owners. So kind of like a small, quaint town. There is mountains, as I said, that surround the whole city. And this is the main mountain peak. It's called Snow Mountain. And you can see this mountain peak from almost anywhere in the city. It's very beautiful. This gives you a picture of what some of the, most of the trees look like there. And there is a park there next to this lake, and it's called Black Dragon Pool. And you can see in the background the beautiful view of Snow Mountain. So learning Chinese, there are a few signs that are translated into English in the main old part of the city where there is some tourism. But as you can tell, it still is up for some interpretation. Grass is napping, please do not disturb, which means don't walk on the grass. So Kevin and I said, well, I think this is probably what we're going to sound like when we start speaking Chinese. People are going to go, huh? What exactly did you mean? So this one we just think is funny, too. The trash cans say unrecycle. So this is a picture of the downtown area where there is some tourism down there. This is an ancient part of town. It's close to 1,000 years old, and the main people group that has settled there for a majority of that time is called the Nashi people. There's waterways that run all through the city. It's kind of China's version of Venice, if you use your imagination a little bit. This is a picture of, it's called baba. It's the bread that they eat in the morning. So when you walk out of your apartment building, many Chinese people do not eat breakfast in their home. They will buy it on their way to work, on the street, or on their way to school. And it's usually this bread, which you can just tell the lady at your gate if you would like it cooked with an egg or without an egg. And she rolls out the dough and puts it in a pan with a little bit of oil, and in about 2 minutes you have breakfast and you're ready to head off to work. And then on the other side of your gate is the fruit truck, and we saw lots of people there getting all kinds of fruit. But what we really enjoyed was everybody getting on their scooters with their bread in one hand and their coconut in a straw in the other hand. It was really neat. This is a picture of Kevin getting ready to take his first ride around the city on an electric scooter. This is a common way of getting around there. And everyone asks, why does that guy have a mask on? He's a short-termer who's there. And it's mainly just because the roads are dusty and there's lots of trucks and buses that if you're on a little scooter, you would breathe all that in. So they wear masks just to keep out the dust. This is a short video that just... as a video at the university, when we visited there, we saw where we would be ministering and saw the students. And during the breaks when they're at school, they all go outside and do their native dancing. So the Chinese believe that sunshine and fresh air and exercise are the key to health. We could probably learn a little bit from that, right? And so at every time there's a break, if you had three classes that day and you had two breaks in between classes while you were there, you would go out twice in your time at school and go out there and dance. So anytime there's a break, the music comes on, the students all rush out, and they all dance for that 15 minutes and then head back into class. You can go to the next slide. This is a picture of some local women from a people group called the Miao, and they're in their traditional clothing. And here's another headdress from a local people group. And here is, the government has established a museum to kind of tell the history of the Nashi people, which I told you were the people who've been settled in that area the longest. So they have a museum that tells you all about their history, and this is some of their clothing over time. The one on the far left is one that you see the Nashi people dressed in all around town. Here is a picture of from the Dongba people, which is another local people group, and they are the last people on earth that still use hieroglyphics. Here is a traditional grave site that you see all over the city. Many of the people are Buddhist, but also many of them worship ancestor spirits. And so you will see at a grave site, very common to see food sitting on the grave. You can see money. You can see incense sticks. And they are go very regularly to the grave sites to try to appease the spirits, to try to take care of their ancestors who are in the afterlife. And one really sad thing that we saw was in the market, you can buy paper iPhones so that you can take it to the gravesite of one of your dead ancestors, and you burn the paper iPhone so that your ancestors can advance in technology in the afterlife. This is a picture of altars where a local people group offers animal sacrifices to appease the spirits and to seek favor. The reason that they try to offer sacrifices or worship these ancestor spirits is so that it will bring them good luck or favor in this life. This is just another picture of Buddhist prayer flags that we saw around the city. This is an old historic Buddhist temple that has been transformed into a park and a museum that you can walk through and see. And this is a local Nashi woman, the one that I told you that they've been there for a long time in that area. And she has her traditional clothing on, and you see all these women just like her with bikes and a cart bringing their vegetables into town each day to sell on the streets. They're very poor people, and these women will stop their bikes and park and pull out and unroll a piece of plastic and lay down all their vegetables and to sell. This is the last slide, and it is a picture, I mean, it's a video, it's a short video that shows you the Nashi people doing one of their native dances.
Hopefully that's helpful, just to give you a little bit of the sights and the sounds of what it's like there in southwest China. So would you mind going back to the first PowerPoint? And just one last slide that we'll close with here. So a lot of times the common question, of course, now is how are we feeling? And whatever you might guess that we're feeling is we would say yes to probably. So if you say, are you feeling excited? We would say yes sometimes, right? And then are you saying, are you feeling sad or scared? Or are you, whoops, not sure what I hit there. But anyway, I'll use you saw it. And so you can be, oh yes, or you may be even feeling a little bit bored of your parents' presentation now. They'd say yes to that too. But please be praying for us. We are, our target date to leave is basically the end of next month. The end of the year here is when we're targeting. We're at 80% of our needed financial support in order to raise. We do have to be 100% in order to go. So we're in striking distance there, hopefully. And so it's starting to feel more real now, right? It's getting closer here. And so the closer it gets, the more that you're feeling that gamut of emotions. So be praying for us, please, as we as a family prepare to go and say our goodbyes. And I think you probably can imagine all the things that you and your family would want prayer for, and that would be a good way to be praying for us too as we get ready to go for our first term. So a couple real quick frequently asked questions as far as what I'll be doing there specifically. Again, you can't go on a missionary visa. The first 2 years we'll be international students ourselves at the college learning Chinese, so we can go on a student visa for the first 2 years. After that, I will need to get a work job, so to speak, and we'll do the church planting on the side. So I will, plan A is for me to teach economics maybe at that college. I taught economics part-time at Oakland Community College. There's also a business that our team is starting, so that might be plan B or a humanitarian group that we're looking at doing. So the other question sometimes is, with it being a communist country, are there any threats to us? And just briefly, I would say that for us, the risk is not that we would get beat up or put in jail or anything. For us, the risk would be that we may get kicked out. So you are allowed. There is a lot more freedom there now than there used to be. So from our understanding, when people come to our house, we can witness to them one-on-one. We're allowed to be Christians ourselves. This is more a concern if we were handing out tracts on the street or if we had large group meetings like this. And so that hopefully gives you, and there's a lot of gray area there. So I wish I even had a better answer myself sometimes as far as what we're allowed to do or not. But that's another thing you certainly can be praying for. So as I said, we would love to have any of you who would be interested in praying for us to sign in the back. If you feel like the Lord is leading you to possibly partner with us financially, I'd love to talk to you more about that as well. Do we have time for one or two questions, or do we want to? Okay, yep, I say one or two, and that'll be. And we'll be here afterwards if you want to ask some more. So, yeah. How long are we studying language? I'm laughing because, like, yeah, forever probably, right? So full time for the first 2 years. Angela, and because it's a smaller city, there's no English-speaking schools there. So and we actually homeschool here too, but we'll be homeschooling there as well. It's kind of the only option anyway. But so Angela and the kids, we've said, hey, this first year, let's, you know, kind of devote that first year to everyone learning language together. So they'll be doing that full time for the first year or two, and I'm sure beyond that, trying to refine it as you guys know, right? So Russian is probably equally as hard as Chinese. So any other questions?
Where's your support from? Do you have local churches, individuals? Where did you get your 80%?
Yeah, we have our home church. Provided a good, probably, you know, 15% or so. We have two other churches that gave another 2.5%, and then everything else has been individuals. So when missionaries used to go out, it used to be maybe the other way around, where 2/3 would come from churches and 1/3 from individuals. But now, mostly, a lot of missionaries would be like us, where at least 2/3 or so are coming from individuals. So for our monthly support. And then was there a hand over here? Maybe this real quick. Yeah, no, thank you. So our team with Send International has, we have a team of 6. So there's another American couple, and the wife actually is Chinese, but American-born Chinese. And then we'll have a single lady from Hong Kong, and a single lady from the Philippines will be the team that we're on. There is Pioneers is also there and have a few people. So again, a lot of us trying to work with the people groups that are coming to that city. So. Thank you again so much for allowing us to share. Look forward to talking to some of you after.
Thank you, Pastor Mike. Thank you. Kevin and Angela, thank you. That was excellent. Thank you. We really, really appreciate that.